This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
It's Worldwide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We love taking you around the globe one queer story at a time. I'm Matt, and we are live from the fabulous Joy Studios at the magnificent Victorian Pride Centre, where tonight I am joined by Stefan.
Good evening.
And hello, Alex.
Bonsoir. Conflicts across the globe has seen a rise in asylum seekers worldwide. Escaping war or persecution can be even more challenging if you are LGBTIQ. We have heard stories of continued persecution in refugee camps and escapes to countries where queer people are still not welcome. And what about when you arrive in your resettlement country? How do you start from scratch to forge a new life in an unknown land?
One organisation that is standing by queer asylum seekers is Many Coloured Sky. They support LGBTIQ plus organisations with capacity building, planning and project development, and empower those at the margins and intersection of LGBTIQ plus communities to participate fully and equally.
Tonight we're joined in the studio by Ian Seal, the founder of Many Coloured Sky, which is a group that does lots of work in the area of LGBT asylum seekers. Welcome, Ian.
Thanks, Matt. Hi, everyone.
Now, first of all, we came across you because we walked into the Victorian Pride Centre and there are absolutely stunning images in the exhibition space at the Pride Centre. And we said, oh, what's this and what's it all about? And it's from your organisation. Tell us about the Freedom Is Mine exhibition.
Sure, thank you. We're obviously really pleased and excited to be able to show the exhibition here at the Pride Centre and to be the second exhibition. So to be showing while the building itself is an attraction and you know, bringing people in. Essentially, this exhibition is an opportunity for members of our queer refugee and asylum seeker peers community to share some aspects of their identity and their stories and their challenges through participating in portraits. For many, asylum seekers are still in the process of applying for protection. It's an inherently political process because of the way our country has chosen to deal with asylum seeker issues. And therefore, some members have needed to be very cautious about how they represent themselves and how visible they are in anything that looks like advocacy. So a number of the images, while revealing important elements of a person's identity and story, also hide their physical characteristics and who they are.
Which is probably a reality for many asylum seekers as they sort of, you know, especially if they're fleeing a country, there's that mix of trying to be yourself but trying to hide as well.
Absolutely. It's a really challenging process and people have come from places where their survival has often depended on hiding everything about who they are. And then as part of the process of seeking protection, they have to prove that they're that very person they've been hiding, which is incredibly challenging.
What are the countries, so Many Coloured Sky, you don't just do art exhibitions. tell us a little bit about what you do and how you support LGBTI asylum seekers.
Sure. So broadly, we call ourselves the Queer Development Agency, and we see ourselves as working to amplify the voices and build the capacity of particularly vulnerable and marginalised LGBTQI communities. That's in Australia and internationally. And of course, here in Australia, LGBTQI asylum seekers are a vulnerable group because of government policy.
In what way? How practically does that show?
I guess in a couple of ways. So firstly, asylum seekers broadly are not treated well in this country. That's a tragic debate that we've been having in many years, and it's become far more politicised than it needs to be, and works against often very traumatised people feeling safe and feeling comfortable when they do arrive here in Australia. So that's obviously an issue for all asylum seekers. But for those who are LGBTQI, there's the added challenges that, and we hear this from many of our members, that accessing settlement services or asylum seeker and refugee services here in Australia, they may experience homophobia and transphobia. A number of them have experienced verbal and even physical harassment in those services. Their needs are often poorly understood. And you know, we can certainly see that LGBTQI organisations may not always understand the needs of people who don't have permanency, don't have Medicare, and you know, for whom English may not be maybe a third or fourth language, or a language that they're only just beginning to learn. And at the same time, asylum seeker and refugee services are not recognising the needs of those who are LGBTQI.
Why? I guess, are they religious based groups that are running these sorts of services, and that's why, or is it's just a low priority for them?
It's a good question, and I think it's fair to say that some organisations are investing far more in understanding these issues and working through it than others. So you know, I don't want to kind of refer to them as a pack that are behaving badly, but I think, you know, they're often responding to a range of different challenges, and you know, reacting to trauma and issues in their broader community. And for some, it may not have hit their radar. It certainly should have. I'm not excusing them in that, but it may not have hit their radar that LGBTQI asylum seekers have different needs and a different set of challenges from the others in their cohort. But often what we hear is it's actually other members or other clients of those services who are the ones who are exhibiting, you know, prejudice and discrimination against our members. It seems to be that in some cultures there's kind of an expectation that you uphold some kind of cis heterosexual idea of what it means to belong to that particular culture. And sadly, you know, when we've heard of incidences of harassment in asylum seeker services, it's generally been from other people of the same cultural background as our LGBTQI members.
So they're bringing their prejudices from their home country, and that's sort of where it's landed.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. And then you know, what we're seeing is that the services themselves haven't thought through how to ensure that LGBTQI people are safe. And so any harassment that they're experiencing is kind of amplified, or their experience of it is amplified by the fact that there isn't a positive response.
We're speaking with Ian Seal, the founder of Many Coloured Sky. And coming up, we're going to explore how building capacity in countries outside of Australia works. This is Worldwide Wave.
Joy 94.9, bringing you the best news and views all week long.
Justice See Kee Oon of the High Court of Singapore says Section 377A serves the purpose of safeguarding public morality by showing societal moral disapproval of male homosexual acts. My name is Yang Far. I'm from Ubud Taga in Singapore, and I'm proud to be morally disapproved of.
We are talking all things with Many Coloured Sky tonight. We put the call out, talking about immigration, talking about asylum seekers. Alex, I know you have one.
Yes, look, it sounds all trivial in the broader scheme of things, but of our theme tonight, what many of these people are going through. But I was quarantined in a little fenced off area in the middle of, Heathrow Airport. In about 2012, I was living in Germany, and I've got a British passport, at the time EU, and an Australian, and my British passport expired, so I thought I didn't realise till it was too late I was travelling, so I just thought I'll travel into UK with my Australian. Well, of course, it came up on their system, and I had to sit in this little fence off area where all the public could walk past me,
square.
The naughty square, It was a white picket fence. It was really funny. It was like in the middle. And they're very polite, but they said, you know, in normal circumstance, this would be grounds for deporting, for sending you back. Because I had tried to travel into the country as an Australian citizen, even though I'm also a British citizen. One of these weird things.
Does highlight, though, yes, the complexity of the laws that the average person does not understand, and how easily... this could...
It's quite frightening when you kind of like the officials, you know what airport officials are like, you know, the British not bad.
They don't laugh.
Some, but yeah, I think the Australian is still some of the most officious I've seen, you know, you're in trouble with the Australian border protection. But anyway, that's my little trivial immigration drama.
Ian Seale from Many Coloured Sky is with us. Ian, are those, that's a fairly... Yeah, a trivial example, but is that ringing true with the kinds of things you hear from LGBT asylum seekers coming to Australia?
Yeah, it's interesting. What we see
often is that different, you know, people who seem to have similar stories, similar backgrounds, similar expectations of you know, safe passage into Australia, have very different experiences. So. The processes that the department use to assess people and to allow people to reside in this country seem to vary. We know from working and to support many of our members through the interview process for a protection visa that it very much depends on which officer you have. And it seems to depend on, you know, which side of the bed that officer got out of that morning. Because sometimes they ask incredibly difficult and insensitive and inappropriate questions and mistrust every single thing they're hearing from our members who are, you know, essentially in one of the most important interview processes of their lives. This is an hour of their life that makes a difference to whether they can live safely in Australia or not. And it's quite shocking to see how different the experiences of two people with very similar backgrounds can be.
Once they arrive in the country, and as you mentioned, this is a whole new world to them, and their language skills may not, you know, language might be the first barrier they have. You or Many Coloured Sky has some programs to help, I guess, make that process a bit simpler. Tell us a bit about those.
So we as I said before, we're a development organisation, and I guess what that means is that we want to strengthen and support communities themselves to be able to meet their own needs. Where we began in working with LGBTQI asylum seekers was to provide a safe space for people to come together and meet and talk about what they would like and talk about what kind of programs and supports they needed. And pre-COVID, that was largely about social support and connection to services. During the COVID period, obviously things became far more complicated, and the Australian government chose not to support anyone on a temporary visa with JobSeeker or JobKeeper or any kind of welfare support. So a lot of our work deferred to being about providing material support to people who are really struggling. So that included grocery delivery, and we used as an opportunity to do mental health check-ins with people, as well as providing small sums of money so that people could buy data to stay connected to us and to each other and to the broader world. But a lot of what we've been able to do, you know, in between lockdowns and now when, you know, touch wood and hopefully we're post lockdowns, is look at building people's computer skills, their employability in various ways, their English language skills. But fundamentally, it's about working with them as a community to and leveraging our privilege, really, to build connections and resources for them. We have a very clear plan that the group are working through, that they developed a 9-point plan looking at what they need to be a strong and resilient community and to be able to support other people as they arrive in the country, as well as supporting each other. And it's very exciting to be working through that with them.
How important is that peer-to-peer support? I mean, it's as you met, you sort of said there, it's one thing for us to say this is how things are done. It's another thing for somebody from their own culture or another, just somebody who's gone through that asylum-seeking experience to say, this is what happened to me, this is how I handled it.
Yeah, it's absolutely important, and one of the things that we did up front as the pandemic began was employ a peer support officer, so someone who is himself a gay asylum seeker, still going through that process of seeking protection here in Australia. And initially, we were only able to fund him for one day a week. We're now up to 3.5 days a week. And he is essential in kind of providing that kind of sense of us as an organisation as somewhere where people can trust and feel safe to come to, and helping them to build communication and support within the group. They're an incredibly diverse group. They're from 19 different countries, and every letter of the LGBTQI plus alphabet. So very, very diverse experiences, but they have a fundamental understanding of what each other have been through, that creates a very strong bond and sense of connection between them.
So we've been very much focused on what you do here in Australia, but you're also doing work internationally, capacity building work internationally. What are the countries you're working in, and how does that work?
So we're in sub-Saharan Africa and in Southeast Asia at this time. So that's Kenya, Uganda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, all countries that face real challenges for their LGBTQI community members. We're also working in Indonesia, PNG. We have a very large project, probably our largest international project is in the Philippines, and we're very excited to be at the point that that project is now about to launch across the Asia Pacific.
And what does that project involve? Is that I guess there's always that risk of, again, the outsider coming in to tell people what to do in their own country. How do you build capacity but still how do you support those local groups to grow themselves?
That's a really important question, and you know, having worked as a consultant internationally on various projects for a number of years before Many Coloured Sky was founded, I often found myself in the position of being launched into someone's community as the expert, and I'm there to solve the problem that the funder has decided is the key problem, rather than the challenge that the community themselves have decided upon. And that's really where we came from. That's really why we developed as an organisation. It was about wanting to work with communities on the issues that they identify, work with the strengths that they already have and reinforce those strengths, and offer a sense of resource, bringing in the things that they may not have had the opportunity to access as a community themselves. So we're certainly not telling people what to do, and we're not driving our own agenda or our own priorities. The beginning of every project in every community is a long process of understanding what are their priorities and where might we be able to offer something valuable into supporting their work on those priorities.
Our guest tonight is Ian Seal, the founder and leader of Many Coloured Skies here in Melbourne. And coming up, we'd like to discuss, you've got one of your projects is around queer children, so we'd like to explore that one a bit more. This is World Wide Wave.
The world's longest running radio show dedicated to international LGBTIQ news and current affairs. This is Worldwide Wave from Australia's Rainbow Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
On Joy 949, on the show that takes you around the globe, one queer story at a time, Worldwide Wave. And a special hello to everybody listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcasts automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwide wave or iTunes or your favourite podcast platform. And don't forget to leave a review.
Now, coming up.
Yes, coming
up. Not just
up,
tonight,
what's
but
up?
In a couple of weeks, something huge. Which, of course, is Joy's Radiothon. Back bigger, better and bonkers.
Oh, bonkers. Well,
because we all go a bit silly in Radiothon time, but that's all good fun because it's all about, it's Joy's biggest fundraiser for the year and it really keeps us going.
And we've pledged to raise how much in our show?
How much should you dob us in for, Stephen?
Yes, you.
$2,000.
$2,000. We're going to make $2,000. We're going to have a special Radiothon show running for 2 hours. Radiothon's from the 30th of March. It kicks off through to the 8th of April. And there are massive number of prizes to win. And it's all hidden in the vault.
The vault. And all revealed.
And we'll also have the Hours of Power will be back, And on the last day of Radiothon, there'll be a huge rooftop party. If you haven't been to the rooftop here at the Pride Centre, it is fantastic. Huge rooftop party, and the everybody will have a chance to unlock the vault for this major prize draw. So stick with us, and we'll have lots more on that coming up.
Joy 94.9.
Our guest tonight is Ian Seal, the founder and leader of Many Coloured Sky, and we're talking all things LGBT, asylum seekers and refugees. Ian, we were just touching before on LGBT children, which is like a special needs subset of a special needs group of a it's a group that's not really talked about much, let alone in the asylum context. What's the project you've got going there?
So we've been, perhaps if I can take a step back and give you the origin story on this. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, I was a consultant to UNICEF, and my role there was reviewing the Philippines' national strategy on HIV prevention. As part of that work, I ran focus groups with various populations of young people who were perceived to be at risk in terms of HIV or affected by HIV. And when I came to meet with those who were young MSM in the charming language of the HIV sector, I was in a room of people who were 10, 11 and 12 years old and who were sex working with adults.
Oh, wow.
But because they identified as gay, somehow they weren't seen as kind of vulnerable, exploited kids. They were seen as agents of their own sexuality. But when I talked to the kids themselves, of course, their sex working came from the fact that they'd been booted out of their homes. They'd been bullied out of school.
Survival.
Survival. They had no other opportunities to look after themselves. And so I took back to UNICEF at the time my concern that, just teaching these kids about safe sex and how to use condoms wasn't going to solve the problem. And the work that really needed to be done was to provide a roof over their heads, opportunity to go to school, 3 meals a day, and someone who loved and nurtured them. And so the project really grew from that. I went back to some of the grassroots LGBT organisations who I'd been introduced to via UNICEF and talked to them about what they saw as the needs of these kids. Very much as I'd heard from the kids themselves, they saw the need was to change the picture of homophobia and transphobia in the Philippines community. So it's been a very significant project to attempt to do that work. What we've been doing over several years is developing pilots, so with the young people themselves and with LGBT adults in the Philippines, developing pilots that look at how we work with the kids themselves and what peer support they need, how we work with parents and families to change their attitudes, how we engage with schools and shift the education system, and how we work more broadly with government. And it sounds like a recipe for banging your head against a brick wall, and it certainly felt like that for a few years, but very excitingly we have made real progress, and there's now real interest from some large NGOs such as Save the Children to look at how this scales up as a national project, and we're about to launch a funding round that will enable some elements of this to be trialled in other countries across the Asia Pacific as well.
Ian, the projects that you're taking on, they're not simple, they're not, can I say they're not sexy, but they're absolutely needed. What drives you to keep doing what you do?
Good question. I guess the glib answer or the short answer might be, I think if and this is a line I'm stealing from someone else, and I don't even know who the someone else is. But if a problem's big enough to solve in your own lifetime, then it's probably not big enough to be really challenging. I do like to take on real challenges, but fundamentally, I guess my experience and so working my early career, I was the first LGBTQI youth worker employed in Victoria way back in 1994. Right. So I set up the first funded programs for queer kids here in Melbourne, and along that journey ran a program called Safe in Schools that was a precursor to Safe Schools, set up PFLAG nationally, and Yeah, I guess I saw the power of community. You know, I was very, very I'm very proud of that work, but I certainly don't want to say that it was my work. It was about community working together and about bringing people with passion and commitment. And I do believe that you can move mountains if you have that kind of passion and if you have genuine community connection and engagement. And that's what we see in some really challenged environments, is people who are really passionate, and what we can do is help to resource that passion and create change.
And speaking of community, people can get involved in Many Coloured Sky. They can volunteer and donate. Tell us what they can get involved in.
Absolutely. The D word, donate, is a great one for us. Yeah, we see ourselves as a champion of unpopular causes, and that's not a great funding model. So any donations are very welcome. We're a registered charity, so you can receive a tax deduction for any donation that you make to us. But yeah, absolutely. We're also always looking for volunteers who can help us in particular areas. You know, people with social work or community development backgrounds, people with research backgrounds are really valuable and play a really key role already in much of our work. We're an organisation of less than 1.5 FTE paid roles, and so we rely very strongly on having skilled volunteers who support our work.
And what's next for you and Many Coloured Sky?
I guess we're looking at, you know, post-COVID, let's hope we're post-COVID, that we can return to our roots. You know, in all of our projects internationally and here in Australia, we did have to default to providing that material support to keep communities going over the last 2 years. And that's not our core business. Our core business is that work of supporting communities themselves to grow and achieve their long-term aims. So I'm really excited to get back to that. I mentioned before that we have a project that we'll be kind of launching across the Asia Pacific that will fund 4 LGBTQI organisations in 4 different countries across the Asia Pacific to trial elements of that work we're doing in the Philippines. And I'm really excited to see where that takes us and takes those communities.
Great. We'd love to speak to one of them when it's up and running and find out their experience and what it's doing. Congratulations on your work. Where can people go to find out more about it?
We're not great on social media. You can find us on Facebook and on Instagram, but don't expect us to be popping up in your feed every day. And that's
so you're after a social media volunteer. There's one.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's partly about needing to be cautious about what we promote and who is seen, but it's also about being busy and doing other things. We also have a fairly comprehensive website, so that's just manycoloredsky.org.
Fantastic. Ian Seale from Many Coloured Sky, thank you so much for dropping in, and good luck on your future projects.
Thank you.
From coming out to reaching out, fighting for change or battling to be heard, these are the stories of the diverse rainbow community from across the globe. Coming to you from Australia's LGBTIQ radio station, Joy.
Hola a todos. Hello, everyone. This is Sergio Tobar Velarde from Mexico City, director of the film 4 Moons. And I want to say hello to everyone listening through Joy 94.9.
Radiothon is coming March 30. And we're giving you the chance to unbolt the vault to win thousands of dollars worth of prizes. Keep listening to Joy for more exciting details.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
A big thank you to our guest tonight, Ian Seale, the founder of Many Coloured Sky. You can find them at manycolouredsky.org or on the socials. And don't forget that exhibition is running here at the Victorian Pride Centre just for this week, so come in and see it.
And thank you to everyone who's interacted with us on messages, Facebook, Adam, James, Peter, a heap more.
And behind the scene, though, we have to thank our podcaster, Peter, our social media master, Dean, and also our spreadsheet guru, Damien.
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
What would we do without them?
Absolutely nothing.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave, or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.